Thunder echoed above the castle as a jagged arm of lightning lit up the sky. Inside, Princess Reynalda cornered her brother, Prince Stefan.
"You can't do this," he shouted. "If you kill our father, I will make sure this whole kingdom knows you're a treasonous murderer."
"If I kill our father, I will be the queen this kingdom finally deserves. And you can finally learn to earn your keep around here as a servant."
"And how do you think you will keep me from telling everyone what you've done? Who will they believe?"
"You dare to threaten me?"
scoffed Princess Reynalda.
"If you will not serve my castle, keeping it clean and cared for, you will find someone who will. And until you do, you will live your life as the lowly, filthy scavenger that you are."
She snapped her fingers, and in an instant, Stefan changed. He had transformed into a slender black crow. He let out an agonized caw at this new form and darted around the castle foyer. Reynalda watched him, pleased with herself.
"And if you don't find someone to serve us to our satisfaction," she said, "I suppose you'll stay like that forever."
She threw open the castle doors, and Stefan fled as the shrill sound of her laughter echoed through the castle. I'm Vanessa Richardson. You're listening to Tales. Today, I'll be sharing the dark, vengeful story of the Enchanted Quill. This tale is one of particular interest due to its curious history and mystical discovery. Dating back to the 1860s, the Enchanted Quill is one of 500 fairy tales in a collection that belonged to historian and amateur folklorist Franz Xaver von Schönwerth. The tales on this podcast are dark, sometimes scary, and full of adult themes. As a warning, the original story of the Enchanted Quill features violence and some sexual themes. Please exercise caution for children under 13. If you want to hear more tales, you can find all of Parcast's podcasts wherever you listen to podcasts. Many of you have asked how to help the show. If you enjoy Tales, the best way to help us is to leave a 5-star review wherever you listen. In 2012, Erica Eikensier, a cultural curator and folklorist, uncovered Franz Xaver von Schönwerth's collection in a municipal archive in Regensburg, Germany, and likened it to discovering buried treasure. The dates of the archives suggest that while the brothers Grimm were compiling their own collections of folklore and fairy tales, Schönwerth was busy traveling the upper Palatinate region of Bavaria, listening to ancient narratives that had been passed down by word of mouth for generations. And he wrote them all down, seeking to recreate the most precise and accurate version without adding any touches or flares of his own to smooth out the stories. And this is what has come to be so striking about the collection. Schönwerth's tales ignore storytelling conventions and defy logic. This allowed him to honor the original versions, attempting to keep them as intact as possible. You'll notice that while the story is emotionally satisfying, not every event makes sense. So, without further ado, we give to you The Enchanted Quill. Deep in the forest, just beyond Prince Stefan's castle, Felix was riding home to his three sisters after the long journey into town for supplies. He was handsome, clean-shaven, and exhausted. Felix was not far from home, and he knew his sisters were waiting on him for supper, but he could not keep his eyes open any longer. So he found a soft, mossy embankment, laid down to close his eyes. And before long, Felix was in a deep sleep. Months had passed, and Stefan remained in the form of a crow, for he could not break his sister's curse. He tried in vain to leave messages and cries for help for the groundskeepers and other servants at the castle. even though he still had his voice, no one ever listened. All they saw was a dirty black crow pecking at their feet, and everyone chased him off, kicking and swatting him with broomsticks and shovels. On this day, as he pecked at the forest floor for grub and worms, he came upon a horrifying stench. Following the smell, he found old torn packages and parcels of groceries all labeled Felix. Finally, he came upon a bundle of rotten meat. Stefan could not believe his eyes when he found a bearded man sleeping unfazed beside the stinking pile of rot. What man could sleep like this? How could such a foul odor not disturb him? The man, whose long brown beard wrapped all the way around his shoulders, must be Felix. And Felix was surely under some sort of a spell, thought Stefan. He knew he had to help him, lest he stay stuck in his trance forever. He began pecking at the man's feet, but could not wake him. He refused to give up and finally gave one last knock with his beak right on his head. The man startled awake with a gasp.
"Who goes there?" he shouted.
Felix looked around with concern, but no one was there, until he laid his eyes on the crow.
"You!"
he shouted, gathering himself and standing.
"Why would you wake me?"
"You've been asleep for many months, good sir, maybe even years."
Stefan swooped around Felix and grabbed a bit of his beard to show how long it was. Felix clutched his beard, horrified at its length.
"Why, it's true."
He looked around, taking in his rotten spoils.
"You've saved me from a cursed eternal slumber. I can return to my sisters and ease their worried minds," he said to the bird. "However shall I ever repay you?"
Stefan hopped about before the man as if considering a good answer. Then he said,
"By giving me one of your sisters to marry. Take them this picture."
Stefan dropped a small folded piece of parchment into Felix's hand, with a crudely drawn bird on it. Then he flew off, leaving Felix alone, but finally awake once more.
"Oh, he's absolutely hideous. No, Felix, I don't care what he's done now for the family. I shouldn't have to marry him."
Petra, the oldest of his three sisters, took one last disgusted look at the picture of the bird and tossed it in her brother's face. Felix thought his sisters might be a bit more excited to have him home finally, but they seemed to have carried on well enough without him. They saw no need to thank the bird, as Felix did. He turned to Hedda, his middle sister, who turned up her nose.
"Absolutely not,"
she said firmly, and excused herself from the room. Felix turned hopefully to his youngest sister, Inez, who was picking the photo of the bird up off the floor. She blushed a bit as she took in the image. Then she finally said,
"What an interesting creature he must be."
And she tucked the picture into her own pocket and gave her brother a warm, welcoming hug before she retired to her room. Inez awoke the next morning to the sounds of a horse-drawn carriage pulling up to her cottage. She heard her sisters in a scuffle in the hallway, arguing about who it could be. Inez followed her sisters outside, for she was just as curious as they were. They were all equally surprised when the door swung open and out hopped Stefan, the crow. Inez came forward to get a closer look at the bird. Her sisters had already lost interest and returned to the house. Inez felt a bit of kinship with the bird, and she said,
"Would you like to come in for a treat?"
Inside, Inez put a kettle of tea on and gave Stefan her full attention.
"I fear I must enlist your help," Stefan said. "I'm sorry to arrive unannounced, but I..."
"Say no more,"
Inez interrupted him.
"You saved our brother from a cursed sleep of 3 years, and you returned him safely to our family. We are indebted to you and will gladly help you in any way we can."
"Then you will join me at my castle?" Stefan asked.
"As you wish,"
she said. Inez agreed that while Felix was out tending the farm, she and her sisters would pay their debts to the crow. The carriage let them all out at the edge of the woods, and the three sisters followed the bird tentatively into the shade of the forest.
"I must warn you, there will be many frights along the way, but you mustn't turn back. None of you. We must stay the course," said Stefan.
And with that, he broke into flight again, leading the way. The treetops enclosed the sisters in darkness as they traveled through the pathless woods, and yellow eyes danced all around them. Soon, the trees seemed to come to life, reaching out their twisted, gnarled branches, grabbing at the girls as they fled the grasp of the massive wooden figures. Vines rose up out of the dirt and twisted around Inez's limbs, threatening to pull her to the earth. She screamed, ripping the vines from her limbs. Haunting sounds of animals wailing and howling in the distance swirled around her as she staggered onward through the dark. Her breath quickened with every step. Could it be, she thought, that we are descending into hell? Inez had begun to abandon hope that their journey would ever come to an end when Stefan let out an alarming caw and swooped down in front of Inez.
"This way," he said,
and Inez and her sisters shared a look of agreement before following the black bird. As they followed the sound of Stefan's flapping wings, light began to break over the horizon, and they could once again see the forest around them. Inez gasped at the beautiful sight. The sisters now found themselves in a beautiful, fragrant lemon grove that led up to an elegant castle.
"Come along," said Stefan as he swooped past the sisters.
Inez quickened her pace, but instead of following, her sisters were collecting as much fruit as they could carry from the lemon trees.
"You mustn't take that," said Inez. "We already owe a great debt to the prince."
"Prince!" cried Petra,
and she and Hedda erupted into laughter.
"Is that what that filthy animal told you he was? A prince?"
Inez ignored her sisters' jeers, and eventually they all arrived outside the castle doors.
"I see you have found some treasures along the way here," said Stefan,
and with a taloned claw, he grabbed one of the lemons from Hedda's armful and let it fall with a splat at her feet.
"No matter," he said. "Please entertain yourselves while I attend to some important matters with your sister."
The castle doors creaked open, and Stefan landed gently on Inez's shoulder.
"Come along, madam," he said.
Inez entered the castle, and her sisters began to follow her in.
"Watch yourselves now," Stefan said to Hedda and Petra. "Don't let your curiosity get the better of you."
Before her sisters could follow her inside, the door slammed behind Inez. It was just her and the crow now. Inside the castle, Stefan led Inez to a cozy room with plush green velvet curtains and intricately carved furniture. Everywhere Inez looked, there was gold, candlesticks, grandfather clocks, and etchings on the arches above the doorways, all shimmering gold. But the room did not feel cold, but warm and welcoming. She turned back to Stefan, but instead of the bird she had arrived with, there stood a man. Inez had not known many men in her life, but she was sure that the one who stood before her was indeed the most handsome of them all. He took a step forward and took her hand, but before he could say a word, they were interrupted by a commotion. Inez's sisters had erupted into argument just on the other side of the palace doors, shrieking and carrying on. Inez could see them watching through the glass peephole in the doorway. Stefan turned away from the scuffle by the door, with disappointment on his face. He gave Inez's hand a small squeeze and offered her a sad smile before disappearing into thin air. All in an instant, the castle was gone. Hedda and Petra toppled to the ground, As the doors they were pushing against vanished out from under them, the girls were no longer at a castle, but in a darkened forest again, standing side by side beneath a fir tree.
"Ah," said Stefan,
now in crow form again, as he flew in circles above the girls.
"I warned you not to be consumed by your curiosities."
A flash of lightning brightened the sky, revealing that Inez's clothes had now also been transformed. Her modest dress was now hanging off of her, ripped, tattered, and filthy. She looked up at the bird in dismay, betrayed by this.
"Only the youngest among you can make right your wrongs," said Stefan. "She must walk to the city in rags and accept whatever work she is offered," he said.
Hedda and Petra looked on in horror as their sister's eyes brimmed with tears. But Inez bravely faced the bird as she bit her lower lip to keep it from quivering in fear. She gave him a strong, defiant nod, accepting her fate. Next, we'll see Inez's trials and punishment. Now back to the story. A storm broke out as Inez wandered into town, desperate for shelter from the rain. Soaked, muddied, and matted, she was turned away from every pub and inn she came across. Inez had all but given up. She came to a bridge with an awning and slumped against its pillar, curling up, hoping to warm her soaked and shivering body. She sat in the darkness of the awning and began to weep when the light of a lantern filled the bridge.
"Oh, who's there?"
said the voice of a man. He raised the lantern and spotted Inez.
"Why, there, young miss, are you all right?"
Inez tried to compose herself in order to answer the man, but he could see clearly for himself the young girl was not all right.
"Say, you're looking for a place?"
he asked. Inez nodded as round, heavy tears rolled down her cheeks.
Do you think you could manage some chores? Say, do some cooking and cleaning for the princess who lives here."
He motioned to the castle just past the bridge with a jerk of his head. Inez suddenly realized she hadn't stopped on just any ordinary bridge, but the bridge of a castle moat. Desperate for a roof over her head, she was overeager in her reply.
"I can do the job, any job at all."
Inez stood as proudly as she could before the castle attendant.
"Then you best come with me, miss," he said. "We'll get you something to eat and have you out of those wet clothes in no time. You'll start first thing in the morning."
Inez eagerly followed the man inside to the warmth of the castle. But the morning came without any of the comfort and safety Inez hoped for. Instead, that first morning, and the many that followed it, brought an array of new horrors. That morning, Inez entered the kitchen and stood before a pile of dead, mangled chickens, their feathers matted and bloodied. She knew these chickens were meant to become a hearty, savory meal, but she had only ever made porridge and the occasional sweetbread at home. She swallowed hard as she lifted a chicken by its neck and sliced open its middle, watching its bloodied guts pour out. But there was no time to dwell on her disgust, nor was there time to waste worrying over her shortcomings, for lunch was to be served promptly at noon.
"You worthless wretch! Get this measly meal out of my face!"
The princess of the castle shoved a platter off of the table, sending it crashing to the ground. Inez immediately knelt to tend to the mess. The princess looked down on her with disgust and rose to leave the room. As she passed the mess on the floor, she glared down at Inez, taking a calculated step, landing the heel of her boot right down on Inez's hand. Inez cried out in pain as the bone crunched under the princess's heel.
"Pity. Perhaps you'll do well to stay out of the way next time," said the princess.
Then the princess left Inez and the mess behind her. Every night, Inez cried herself to sleep. After only a few weeks, it was clear to everyone that Inez was not well equipped for the castle chores. The food was always burnt and tasted acidic, and the silver was more tarnished than ever. The ironing and the tailoring piles grew by the day, and no amount of stitching or pressing made the mound of clothes more manageable. Her sobs grew more bitter each night, and she yearned for the company of her brother, or even her arrogant sisters. A small, persistent knock on the window drew her out of bed one night. She pulled back the curtain, only to find the crow. Anger burned in her chest at the sight of the small bird, but she angrily turned away from him. He continued to gently peck on the window until she relented and pushed open the window, letting him in to land on the windowsill. "My sweet girl," said the bird. "It is me, Stefan."
"I don't want to see you anymore," she said through her tears. "Why have you left me here like this?"
The crow hopped along the sill, closer to her. "I know that the test is trying to the soul, but soon enough you'll see what it's all for." She turned away from the bird bitterly. He hopped after her. "You mustn't lose hope yet. Here, take one of my feathers. Use it as a quill to write down any wish you like, and that wish will come true."
"Any wish at all?" she asked.
And the crow nodded, lifting a feathered wing for her. But instead, Inez plucked from the bird a large, wide tail feather.
"If you say so," she said.
And without another word, the crow took off into the night. Before she went back to sleep, Inez wrote on a scrap of parchment the names of her favorite dishes: meat pie, schnitzel, and raspberry strudel. Then she tucked the paper and the quill beneath her pillow before she finally drifted off to sleep. In the morning, Inez stepped into the kitchen early to try her hand at preparing breakfast for the princess. But the dining room was already set with shining silver and china, and in the center were steaming, hot, delicious-smelling meat pies, schnitzels, and strudels. Her eyes lit up at the sight of such a well-set table. As the princess and her attendants entered, Inez hid just inside the kitchen, hoping to catch word of their approval. The princess ate silently, and all looked on, waiting for her final word on the meal. Finally, she scraped the last drizzle of gravy from her plate and laid her fork down.
"Bring me the cook responsible for this meal," she said.
Inez swallowed hard, and her heart quickened. Perhaps the meal had not been as enjoyable as it looked. An attendant came to fetch Inez and shoved her gruffly through the dining room door to stand before the princess. There was a long silence as the princess looked Inez up and down. Finally, she spoke.
"It seems you've finally gotten your head on straight, girl."
Inez exhaled, relieved to have finally pleased the princess.
"Now let's see if we can't do something about those tatters you wear."
That night, Inez found a package left at her bedroom door. When she opened it, she found the loveliest dresses, beautiful shades of pink gingham and yellow linen with laced edges and dainty sleeves. She put one on and gave herself a spin in the shard of reflective glass that was left in a corner of her room. It was the finest dress she had ever worn, and she couldn't help but feel a little bit royal herself. Inez walked into the kitchen the next morning with a bit more confidence and a bit more cheer. In her pocket, she had a parchment paper with the names of new meals, noodle casseroles, and perfectly steamed vegetables. She poked her head into the dining room and was pleased to see that the dishes were already set out on the table for the princess. Watching from the next room was the castle groundskeeper. Her whole body grew tense under his gaze. She tried to continue with her chores as normal, but his constant, brazen stare seemed to fill the room around her like a fog, making her clumsy and self-conscious. Her dress suddenly felt tight, the collar digging into her collarbone just above her racing heart. She resented the narrow corset and flowing skirt and wished for something dour and bland again so she could disappear against the cabinets. When he angled himself across the room for a better look of her, she could see that a darkness had crept into his eyes. She wanted to be brave enough to stare him down or even demand that he take leave, but the heat of embarrassment rushed to her face, and she quickly turned away from him, hoping he would go on his own. That night, Inez sat by the window reading by candlelight, relishing her privacy once more. She didn't hear anyone enter, but then she felt the hulking weight of a hand on her shoulder and froze.
"You looked so beautiful today in your new dress," said the groundskeeper, practically growling at her.
He let his hand slide from her shoulder up her neck until he was holding her face, which he forcefully turned to look at him. What was he doing here? She thought. Her heart was racing and she felt her face flush. She eyed the quill out of the corner of her eye, and thinking quickly, she softly pulled the man's giant hand from her face.
"Please, if you wouldn't mind closing the door," she said, smiling shyly at him.
The man grinned and turned back across the room. As his hand grabbed the doorknob, Inez quickly grabbed the quill and scribbled,
"Let the groundskeeper spend the night opening and closing the door."
And as she wished, the groundskeeper did. He stood outside of her room all night long, opening and closing the door, until his legs grew tired and his arm ached. When the sun finally rose and night turned to day, his curse was broken and he slunk back downstairs, utterly humiliated. The groundskeeper retreated into the staff quarters and angrily recounted his evening to the castle huntsman and dovekeeper. "Tricked and humiliated by that witch," he grumbled. But the hunter and dovekeeper weren't so sure of the groundskeeper's story and thought that perhaps he just wasn't persuasive enough to woo the young lady. Secretly, they both decided that they too would have a go at seducing the young kitchen maid, certain of their own prowess. After this, Inez must defend herself again. Now, back to the story. The next night, Inez awoke from a sound sleep to the creaking of her bedroom door opening and closing. As she stirred from her slumber, she felt the weight of a man beside her in bed. In the moonlight, she could make out the face of the young huntsman. The man ran a lecherous hand down her leg before he bent down to take off his boots. Inez grabbed her quill. Without hesitation, she wrote,
"Let the huntsman spend all night taking off his boots and putting them back on."
And all night, unable to break the spell, the huntsman dug his feet into his boots and laced them to the very top, tying them tightly, only to untie them and shake his feet free again. Over and over, the man put his boots on and took them off again, sitting on the edge of the bed while Inez, convinced she was safe again, dozed peacefully out of reach. In the morning, when the spell finally broke, the huntsman tied his laces one last time and angrily showed himself out of Inez's room. Inez watched him leave, glaring at him from the safety of her bed. Though she was relieved that she had managed to avoid his advances, she was sure he wouldn't be her last visitor. Inez kept a close watch on the groundskeeper and the huntsman, and neither of them met her eyes as they passed through the castle corridors. But there was a third man now lurking in the kitchen. The dovekeeper, who often kept to himself and was rarely seen indoors, now spent all of his time leering over Inez's shoulder. He hovered over her as she shined the silver and carefully washed the china after mealtime. His unfriendly presence grew more antagonizing as the day passed. The man taunted Inez, blocking her path as she passed from room to room.
"Come on," he said when she locked up the china cupboard and sauntered past him down the hall. "Can't a hard-working guy get a smile from a pretty little thing to brighten up his day?"
Inez bit her tongue and smiled politely.
"I see," he said. "Cat's got your tongue. Or maybe you think you're too good for an old dove keeper like me. Is that it?"
Without looking back, Inez left the great dining hall and didn't take a breath until she was safely away from the man. She stopped to compose herself by the windows overlooking the palace grounds, the gardens, and the dove house. She studied the dove house with its large gated door, keeping all the castle doves contained to their nests, and she got an idea. She looked over her shoulder to make sure the coast was clear and silently let herself outside. The fool dove keeper had left the dove house unlocked. Inez smiled to herself as she lifted the latch and let the gate swing open, letting dozens of doves spill out into the twilight. Inez sat on her bed, fully alert, pretending to read when the dove keeper appeared in her doorway, announcing himself by clearing his throat.
"I thought you might fancy some company. Hoping the evenings make you a bit chattier, a little more friendly in the dark."
He stepped all the way into the doorway, blocking all the light from the hall. Inez held her breath and stood to go to the window. She opened it a crack and secretly put down some breadcrumbs. Before she could turn, the man had advanced on her, pulling her into an unwanted embrace. As if on cue, an ivory-white dove landed on her windowsill to eat up the crumbs she had laid there. The dove keeper saw the bird and quickly became alarmed.
"What's that bird doing out?" "The dove house," he exclaimed. "I must have left the door open. Miss, if you'll excuse me for just a moment, I must attend to castle business."
"Yes, of course," said Inez.
And before he was down the steps, she had already scribbled with her quill,
"Let the dove keeper open and close the dove house door all night."
And that's just what happened. The dove keeper couldn't stop himself. As hard as he tried to be silent, castle attendants nearby were kept awake all night by the constant creaking and slamming of the gate, and they were all furious with the dove keeper. But none of the castle attendants were as furious as the dove keeper himself.
"She's a witch,"
he told the huntsman and the groundskeeper that morning as they met by the servants' quarters.
"It was as if I'd been trapped by magic," said the groundskeeper. "Indeed, it was unbreakable," said the huntsman. "We can't very well stand by and let this continue," said the dove keeper,
and the groundskeeper and the huntsman began to nod in agreement. The three men gathered as many whips and switch branches as they could find. They spread the word to the other castle attendants and caused the other workers to turn on Inez, who everyone now suspected of evil witchcraft. They tore across the castle grounds that night with torches, crying out and cursing Inez's name. She watched them from her tower room and merely shook her head and clucked her tongue. She wrote on a fresh piece of parchment,
"Let them turn on each other and whip themselves."
The mob suddenly froze where they were, stuck in place, until all at once they began to mercilessly lash one another with the whips and switches they carried. They cried out in pain, begging for mercy, for the madness to cease. Blood ran hot from their open wounds, and even as fatigue set in, not one among them could stop the beatings. The princess herself ran out into the mob and tried to bring an end to the chaos, but she was drawn into the fray and ended up taking the brunt of the beating herself. Bruised and bloodied, she dragged herself out from under the mob's abuses and finally broke away, collapsing at the edge of the castle lawn. Stefan flew above the castle. He cawed and sailed over the chaotic scene, landing right before the princess. In the moonlight, her face was illuminated, and the crow stood eye to eye in the mud with Princess Reynalda. A look of realization and horror formed on Princess Reynalda's face as she recognized the bird before her. Stefan clucked with satisfaction as he registered the fear on her face. He let out another deafening cry.
"Stefan," croaked Reynalda. "Let us mend. Let me make it right. Please forgive me."
"My love, Inez, she has served you here these past few months," Stefan said.
Princess Reynalda stared at her brother. All she could do was nod.
"And was that service to your satisfaction?"
Stefan asked. Again, all she could muster was a weak, defeated nod of her head.
"Then it is done."
And just like that, Prince Stefan sat on the ground before his battered sister, a man once more.
"I have broken the curse, and your apologies, your offerings, they're no good here."
He stood valiantly and turned away from the princess. Princess Reynalda dropped her head to the ground, bitterly weeping as the anguished sounds of the mob rose up around her. Stefan stood below Inez's window and called to her. After a moment, she appeared in the castle doorway, and a carriage waited for them just beyond the moat. Stefan took Inez's hand as they stepped past the mob. Inez finally released them from their curse, tucking the quill behind one ear. Stefan and Inez could feel the crowd watching them, awestruck as Stefan led his love to the carriage. He opened the door for her, kissing her gently on the lips, before stepping into the carriage alongside her and riding off into the moonlight. This darkly magical tale reminds us that things are not always what they seem, and that no creature, great or small, is ever unworthy of compassion or kindness. Inez's openness and acceptance of the Black Crow grew into true love, which, in classic fairy tale fashion, is the kind of love that conquers all. Thanks for listening to Tales. If you want to listen to more episodes of Tales or Parcast podcasts, you can find all of Parcast's podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, CastBox, TuneIn, or your favorite podcast directory. Some listeners have been asking how to help the show. Well, if you enjoy the show, the best way to do that is to leave a 5-star review. Join me in 2 weeks for another dark and surprising fairy tale. Tales was created by Max Cutler. It is a production of Cutler Media and is part of the Parcast Network. It is produced by Max and Ron Cutler, sound design by Ron Shapiro, with production assistance by Paul Mahler, additional production assistance by Maggie Admire and Carly Madden. Tales is written by Lisa Fry. I'm Vanessa Richardson.